That was wonderful. Thank you. I feel like I owe him an apology. I spontaneously broke out in song with him. So here we are. We're starting a new series starting this week. We just came out of our series called Facing Your Giants. And so I wanted to comment on a couple of things. Don't worry. I'm not going to summarize the whole series again, okay? Talk about a couple of things. Some of you have shared with me, and over the course of the weeks that we were together talking about facing your giants, people would come up and share some of the individual things that they were facing in their life. And some folks shared that it was their health. And for some, it was illness. For some, it was simply things like how our doctors always tell us we need to eat better and exercise more, right? Well, you know, at the beginning of the year, you always decide you're going to lose, 70 to 300 pounds. You know what I mean? If you're like me, yeah, at the beginning of the year, I'm going to lose weight, whatever it is. But then you start the new year, and the new year always starts after New Year's Eve. So if you stay up and watch the ball drop, you're probably not getting up at 5 to go to the gym or whatever it is, right? So I want to offer you this as just a free life tip. And I can say it's free because we already did the offering, right? And but this coming Sunday is daylight savings time, right? It's fall back. You get an extra hour in your life. It is hard to wake up at 5 a.m. or earlier, whatever it is, on New Year's Day, but next Sunday, 5 a.m. is going to feel like what was 6 a.m. last week. 6 a.m. was going to feel like what was 7 a.m. last week. So if you've wanted to get up in the morning to do a devotion, to do whatever it is, next Sunday is the day you start, okay? All right, I believe in you. I also believe in me. Now, every time I've said that about something like this, I've failed, but I'm going to believe in me anyway, and I'm going to believe in you too. So that's coming up this coming Sunday. All right, one of the other things that people shared, and not just amongst our congregation, but around the world, if you were to Google right now, major topics that people, especially in the United States, are facing, one of the main ones that they face has to do with their finances. Now, it's intermingled with relationships and all kinds of other things. And I know that it gets weird. We always get weird about the church when we talk about money because it seems like somebody's trying to get into your pockets, and that's not what's happening. And so we're going to begin talking through what that looks like, and we're going to be 100% honest with each other all along the journey, starting today. Now, next Sunday, we have All Saints Sunday, and so we're going to be wholly focused on that coming up next Sunday, November the 5th, inviting our families who have lost a loved one over the last year to be here for a very special service that is focused on continuing to love them and care for their loved ones, right? And then in the last 2 weeks after that, we're going to finish things out. But I have a question to start. What do you do with all of your extra money? What? Y'all don't have extra money? What do you do with all your extra money? Spend it? That's nice. Well, in order to spend it, we have to admit that we have extra money, right? So you don't have to do this. This one's going to be a rhetorical in your head question because none of you will probably raise your hand. But how many of you have sat around and thought, I just have extra money? I mean, I just have too much. I just have more than I could need, right? Now, how many have looked at, you can raise your hand on this one, how many of you have looked at someone else and ever thought they have too much money and more than they ever need, right? Yeah, there's a whole list in Forbes for us to do that, right? We can point at the top 100 or whatever it is. We see people around town. We see it all the time, right? But here's part of the problem. You see, one of the fundamental purposes or one of the fundamental problems when we begin to talk about money is that we think that it's all ours. We believe that it's all ours. And so we don't have extra money because it's either available for me to consume or even for me to save. See, I'm not talking about money that you spent all your money so you don't have any extra. No, we've saved it all, we've spent it all because it's all mine. And if I've saved it, I've saved it for my purposes. Whether that's retirement, whatever that may be, right? And we're not saying that saving for things in the future that you're going to need it for is a bad idea. That's a great idea, right? But we have to get at our heart when it comes to possessions, to things, and it's easy to put that all into a category where we talk about money. Because we have assumed that everything we have is ours and only ours. And that's also a uniquely American way to look at everything that we have. Right? We joke about we can't take it with us, right? But we can leave it to whoever we want to have it and still be in control of it, whether it's money or land or items that may be possessions or whatever it is. Even in death, we hold on to that it is ours, and only those who we want to have it can receive it, and they can only sometimes even use it in the ways that we deem okay for them to use it in. We are very focused that it is ours. Now, I can see that you're already mad about that, so we're going to jump in. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. We're going to start with one verse right here this morning. It says, "Then Jesus said to them, 'Watch out, guard yourself against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life isn't determined by one's possessions, even when someone is very wealthy.'" Now, I think when we read this, we're like, yeah, that's not talking to me. I'm not a greedy person, right? I don't think I'm defined by my possessions. I mean, I have a few things that I like. I buy a few things. I save for a rainy day, whatever it is. This could not be talking about me. I am not a greedy person. Sometimes I do think, though, we begin to default into mindsets that are around us. Maybe we grew up without, so we have a focus on having enough. We've never really defined what's enough, if we're going to be honest. Perhaps you have. If you have, that's a wonderful thing to do. When we think about some of our predominant people who talk about finances on the radio, we won't name any names. They have a station in Franklin, Tennessee. There's no definition of enough, right? There's order it in such a way that you have what you need, but then once you cross the have what you need threshold, the sky's the limit. Take as much as you want. Be wise with it, save with it, be generous with it. But there is no talk of when enough is enough. And you see, Jesus talks about money a lot. So I think the church gets unnecessarily dinged sometimes that we talk about money. Jesus talks about money, possessions, where our heart is, who our true master is a lot. And over this series, we're going to pull from the sayings of Jesus and begin to see what that looks like to actually be faithful disciples, even when it comes to one of the things that we keep the most secret from the people around us. How many of you ever showed your W-2 or your paycheck to your children when they were growing up? Yeah. One, the bookkeeper I saw, right? I remember my dad being so mad when he had to fill out FAFSA when I was going to college because I would be able to see it too, right? If it's so secret that we have to hide it, I think it already starts out on the wrong foot, doesn't it? Now, I understand that feeling. I totally do, right? But I think a deeper question is, why is that our default? Why is that already ingrained in us? Why is there so much pride and self-worth? Why is there so much better than and not as good as tied up in these theoretical numbers in our bank account? A reality of our church the last couple of weeks is that we've had several funerals. And you know what was never mentioned at any of them? Their 401k. Their possessions of any kind. How they treated or dealt with money, other than to say, people would say they were generous with their time, with their affection and care, and with their finances in some instances. As a matter of fact, the only people who mention finances around a funeral are usually the people who want it after the loved one is gone. And we don't usually hold those in high regard when in the midst of loss, that's what's on their mind. Does talking about money make you nervous? Here's what I want us to test out. You see, I believe that it shouldn't. Because I don't think that anyone who applies what Jesus says ends up regretting it. And that's a pretty strong Jesus juke I'm doing up here with your money and Jesus, okay? I want to be honest with that and up front. But why do we get so nervous? Is it because we can't control it? You see, I don't believe we can be fully devoted followers of Christ if we don't invite Christ into the realm of our personal finances. And here's the Pepsi challenge that I like to offer us when we do talk about it, is part of a holistic understanding of your finances and part of how you break the cycle of greed that is prominent in families, and I'm not saying it's yours, but in most families, if we're being honest, is that we do give away and be generous with our money. But you don't have to give it here. And the finance team's like, whoa, 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 wait a second. And I'm being serious with you. You see, if we want to break the hold that money has on us, when we start to be generous with it, I believe that's one of the main ways that we can do that. And so if you think that there's something about getting money into our coffers, or if you think I work on commission, I can tell you I don't, right? Give it somewhere else. Take the money. Be like Jesus. And find a way to break the hold that it can have in your life. Because you see, financial issues are spiritual issues because they reveal who's really in control of our lives. You see, we all ultimately want to be in control of our health, our relationships, of our finances, whatever it is. Every realm of our lives, we want to be God. That is the fundamental human condition. Adam and Eve, they wanted to decide what was right and what is wrong, and we have not changed one iota since then. We just argue about it more publicly on social media, right? That was the fundamental heart of eating from the tree of good and evil. We want to decide what's right and wrong. We want to decide what we should do and shouldn't do, and we certainly want to decide what other people should and shouldn't do. We want to decide and control everything in our lives. And our finances is a way that we do that. We can control others through our finances. The services that we get, whether our kids come home to see us, whether they take the profession we want them to take, whatever it may be, we can control people and things with our money in a way that speaks to the God of self that lives inside of us. This is a bold statement, but the moment that you think you own your money owns you. The moment we think that we own our money owns us. Look at Matthew 25. We're going to pull up verses 14 and 15 first. It says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who is leaving on a trip." You've probably read this one before if you've been in church. "He called his servants and handed his possessions over to them. To one, he gave 5 valuable coins. To another, he gave 2. And to another, he gave 1. He gave to each servant according to that servant's ability. Then he left on his journey." Now, this is Jesus teaching about managing finances, but also who's ultimately in control. And we get tied up in this, in the fact that the one who gets 5 gets more than the other 2. Have you got 2 siblings? If your parents gave you 5 out of 8, another one 2 out of 8, and another one 1 out of 8, that'd be tough, right? We don't like that. That's not fair. Life should be fair all the time, especially for me, right? If not for everybody else, definitely for me. So we get tied up in that. And then we see that the one who gets 5 goes out and does something with them. We talk about it through the terms of our modern life. We say he invests them, he builds a business, he does whatever, and he turns it into 5 more. And then the one who gets 2, what does the one who gets 2 do with it? Same thing, right? And what does the one who does 1, what happens with him? He buries it. He says, "Master, I know that you are shrewd and you would ask for an accounting. So I went and buried it to make sure that I could give it back to you when it came back. I wanted to be wise and not lose it." And then we know how the master does come back. You see, that one at the end, the one who had 1, he tells us a truth that the other 2 don't know, the other 2 do know, they just don't tell us explicitly. And it's that there will be an accounting. And that they are responsible for it, that they will be held accountable, and that what they have is ultimately not theirs, it's whose? the masters in this scenario, right? Which when we read into it, we say, well, that I think Jesus is talking about God in some form or fashion in that way, right? And so then we look down at verse 19. So we begin to skip down to where this begins to happen. And it says, now after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The managers didn't get to keep it. It was never theirs to begin with. You're like, yeah, but it's attached to my social security number and nobody else can get into that account except for me, except for my kids who watched my ATM code that one time. It is mine, right? Did you feel it? You don't have to nod or make eye contact or anything. Just point at your neighbor. But you feel that, right? When I say it's not yours, yes, it is. Yes, it is, right? I didn't know what he's talking about. He's just a clergy person. I'm probably, right? It is mine. I'm not greedy, but it's all mine. I can do with it as I see fit. There's nothing wrong with that. I earned it. I worked hard. Nobody gave it to me. I could do what I want to with it. And I like to be generous sometimes, most of the time. I even schedule it in my bank account. I'm going to be generous. Monthly, auto draft. The rest of it's mine, though. The rest of it I can do with as I see fit. And if I'm being honest with you, I wasn't quoting you, I was quoting me. I have it too, without a doubt. I feel it down in my bones. The people that I have seen break that cycle throughout their lives have usually aged to a point of wisdom. And sometimes they can see the finish line in sight and they begin to realize that it wasn't all about those things that we chase sometimes when we were younger, but sometimes we chase it our whole life. We work for more. We spend our time and our energy and our families on accumulation of more. And usually we get to a point in our life where we wish we could go back and do it a little different. And we spend all of that money to get more time with the ones that we love and the things that really matter. We get tied up in how much each person gets, 5 and 2 and 1. And we get tied up in what they do with it, whether they made good choices with it or whether we made bad choices with it. I mean, heaven forbid if somebody asks you for $5 and you see that they have an iPhone. They obviously shouldn't get the money, right? They've made a bad choice with their money. And is it implied that I never have? Perhaps we have iPhones in our life too. And if we can get back to the place where we realize that it's not about the 5 or the 2 or the 1, that even in the story where they come back, the point is that it was never theirs to begin with. That the master is returning and that there will be an accounting. Accountability, responsibility. It turns out we are managers. And God's going to ask, what did we do with it? The master asks, where did it all go? This is where we dive down and we make it really practical. And I've talked about this with you and other churches before, and nobody seems to like it. We have to track it. What if you went to your investment person and you asked, what happened with my money? And they were like, I don't know. I mean, I bought some stuff and I sold some stuff. I've slept since then. I don't know. But we are managers. What if God said, where did it all go? Maybe some of you have a spreadsheet. or Quicken or whatever it is, or you use Mint, or used to be called Personal Capital, now it's called like Empower or something. There's all kinds of ways that you can use to track it, right? If we're going to be accountable for it, we got to know what we did with it to start. So this is a super practical question this morning that you don't like. Do you know what you did with it? Are we tracking it? Do we have any idea? Because if it's not ours and we are managers of it, then we have a responsibility. Now, if it's ours and I can do with it whatever I want with it, then I don't have to track it because it's mine anyway. And the only deciding factor is what I want to do. And whatever I want to do is what we're going to do with it. Can you feel it? I'm just going to ask you, please don't raise your hand internally. Visitors, it was really nice to have you this morning. We'll help you find some other churches, right? No, we're really happy that you're here. We really are. I don't mean that like you should leave. I just mean we don't like talking about money. It shouldn't affect my pocketbook. We want to come to church, just make us feel good, uplifting music, tell us how great we are and everything we're going to do, and then send us on our way, right? But to be a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ affects all the areas of our lives, including the realm of our finances. Now, I heard somebody say one time, well, I could do that if I wanted to, when we talked about tracking it. And I want to be clear on that this morning. Knowing you can know is very different from actually knowing. Does that make sense? Again, call your money manager person. Where's my money? And they say, well, I could look if I wanted to. Right? How long do they work for you? However long it takes to hang up and call somebody else. Right? No, we're not expecting them to have all of your accounts memorized or whatever it is, but we are expecting that they have a computer program that does. We're expecting that they send us quarterly statements anyway. We're expecting actually that they were proactive in letting us know where the money was, that they didn't make any moves that we didn't approve of or want to have happen. So when we begin to shift, and this morning we're just kind of talking about perspective on it with the one practical of beginning to track and understand where it actually goes. You see, and that's what goes on with the financial gurus that are on TV and the radio. That's the very first place they start with people, right? Where did it go? Well, I'm not them. I'm not in debt up to my ears. I don't have all this stuff. I don't need to do that. Matthew 25 tells us something a little bit different. It tells us that the master wants to know where the money is going because it reveals our heart. It reveals who we are. It reveals what we value, what we put first, and whether the money belongs to the master or whether we are masters of ours. You see, we've begun to believe that if we are wise and prudent and good masters of ours, that we got it right. But Jesus tells us something different, that we should be good and faithful stewards, right? Managers. But that we are not the masters of that which we've always believed is really ours. Now, before you don't come back, send me an email, all right? And we can get together and chat about it. And you can tell me all the ways that I'm wrong. And I won't try to convince you otherwise. I'll just listen. Because I believe within that conversation, we'll begin to see where our hearts are. We'll begin to see how much we want to control. We'll begin to see that we really do think we're in control of it all and it's all ours. And when we say it doesn't belong to anybody else, we're not just talking about other people. We're saying it doesn't belong to God either. Or only a portion, or whatever it may be. What does it look like if we were to live in Matthew 25 and to see what we have been given. Because it's not just finances. Finances is where it gets so sticky, icky, that it's difficult and we get fired up and some actual change can begin to happen. But it has to do with our gifts and talents. It has to do with our relationships. It has to do with everything in our life. They have been given to us by God for us to use the way that God would have us to use them. And that doesn't mean you can't buy yourself something. That doesn't mean you can't have relationships with the people that you want to have relationships. It doesn't mean that you can't use your gifts in ways that make you feel good. You absolutely can. But the difference is are you the whole focus of all of that? Or is God the whole focus of all of that? So if we lived in Matthew 25 and we wanted to be holy, devoted followers of Jesus Christ, it would even include the realm of our finances. Whether we're at the stage in our life where we're still earning more or education, or whether we're at the stage in our life where we're just making what we have last as long as we can. Maybe we're at the stage in our life where we don't know what we're going to do and if we even have enough. I believe that God wants to be involved in all of our lives, in all of the ways that we could have God involved in who we are and in what we do, and that our finances are a part of that. Let us pray. Lord, help us. We want so desperately to be your people. But if I'm being honest, I'm usually the one who gets in the way of that. Sometimes it's just what's easiest. Sometimes it's what's convenient. Sometimes it's just what I want, no matter what. And sometimes I do the right thing. Lord, help me to examine all the areas of my life so that I might find where you're not in control of it. And help me give it back over to you. In your son's name we pray. Amen.